70s. Now you get a lot of subtlety.
It's okay.
Yeah, what are you going to do with it?
I'll take it to the Women's Center.
Uh-huh. Okay. With the Barnard Women's Center?
Yeah.
Is that I think that in the 70s it rings more seriously. The television is the best barometer. It's the best therapy in the world. And if you really just want to just get everything off, everything that's awful, watch TV. And I watch a lot of it. And the kinds of things that happen in terms of women. No, I've not. I've heard some things about it, but I've not seen it, even one show. So I don't know. Maybe you'd want to comment on that. But I think it does. But I, huh?
I'm a consultant.
Oh, is that so? I've not seen it. Had I seen All That Glitters, the sex role, the Lear thing? I've not. I've seen some of his other things that I think are very poorly done in terms of women and other minorities. However, I've not seen this one. I wish I had. I wish I knew you were going to be here today. I've made a point of it. I see you, I'm coming. But I think that is true, but I do not feel that the incorporation, okay, the gut feeling is, oh my goodness, racism is more important. I think that people very much want to say, what about me, not realizing that me is locked into racism. You see, white women consistently come up with, oh my God, what about me? Not understanding that me is racism too, you see?
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying, but I certainly agree with you that societally, racism is seen as a more serious issue. Yes.
The notion that just change the statement and that'll make it clear was brought home to me when I was explaining to a black man who had some personal decisions to make. Well, actually, he was ventilating to me about Harlan was saying, but those blacks don't want those jobs. They never wanted them. A few years later, they were saying the women don't want them. So I pointed out to him, this is what I've been saying to you. All you need to do is scratch out one and replace it with the other. He's just saying, he was really impressed.
Mm-hmm.
They were saying precisely the same thing now as in relation to women.
It very much helps.
They didn't want the responsibility. They didn't want the hard jobs. It's okay.
That's right. When you're dealing with people, there's nothing foolproof. There's no magic wand, but that certainly helps. That's a good example. Yes?
If I could just make one comment,
I don't
care. I teach quite a few black women, and I do try to blend a lot of this whole thing of racism and sexism. But I find that many of the black women identify much more with the race problem than the sex problem. And many of them, maybe it's lack of exposure, maybe I'm not approaching right, often look at me and say, hey, you know, to the effect of, this is still a white bourgeois woman's problem.
Yeah, Yeah, I think that I touched on that, and I mean, we can certainly deal with it in more depth, but I think that it is part of the acculturation of the black woman. The black woman has always been seen as the bitch, the sapphire, the castrator, the big
they
mama.
They've
heard that. It's acculturation. I mean, you know, there's some strange notion going around that black women don't get acculturated with everybody else, and we do. You know, I mean, there are no special materials for us, and we buy the same dream, and I think that one of the pity parts of it, is what I was saying, is that we are thought of as part of we're seen as the oppressor, and not as part of the oppressed, okay? And we tend to wear a lot of guilt around them. That's what I was saying before, and I think that when you talk about liberation, it's a misnomer. Liberation has to do with choice. Liberation does not deal with necessity. The black woman has been out there because she has had to be out there. The other piece to that is that when you look at the institutions, even in the black community, the black woman has had very little to do with them in terms of decision making. Now, I mean, I came up in the church. So now, see, I'll preach along with the best of them and know the church backward and forward. I was in there on Sunday morning in the summertime, 8:30, because we had pre-Sunday school, because it wasn't school, see. And then during the thing, it was 10, and then went to church 11, and then had the ushers board tea, you know, the ushers, and blah. Okay. Right-handed fellowship and the whole thing, and during my entire childhood, women fried the fish and bought the Cadillacs, and kept the building fund going, but when it came to where that building was going to be built and how many windows were going to be in the front, we didn't have a thing to say about that. Not nothing to say about that. When it came to, and the reason I single out the church is because that is one of our strongest institutions, and still is, even though it is certainly waning along with many other religious institutions in the greater society, it is waning. But when we look at an institution, a black controlled institution in the black community, the church is probably the one that looms the largest. So that's the only reason I pulled that one out. And even in that institution, we were not at all the policy makers. We were the drones. We were the workers, just like we were in everything else. So I think that that misnomer of liberation is unfortunate, okay? And what I was saying before you made that comment about the guilt thing was that that is very common. That's not at all unusual. And unfortunately, our media feeds that, and many other kinds of things feed that. I think in the 70s, we have to, when dealing with racism and sexism, we have to not dwell on the personal approach like prejudice, discrimination, bigotry, stereotyping. We have to deal with the institutionalization and deal with the institution. We have to deal with behavior. We have to deal with the fact that there are certain people locked into certain kinds of positions automatically, without question. And not deal with, oh, well, you know, it's about my heart, and I can't legislate my heart, and I can't feel like this. We talked all through the 50s, and we talked through the 60s, and we burned up a little bit, and so on and so. But I think the 70s, we must concern ourselves in this period with the institutions of two of the deepest institutionalized structures in our society, that they permeate their self-feeding. We don't need any signs, okay? There are no signs up anywhere, but the institutions thrive and run. The last piece of the nature thing, I touched on No Larger Struggle, and I'll get back to that. But the last piece in the nature thing, in terms of institutionalization, I think also, is the fact that we must recognize, in dealing with both racism and sexism, that in the 70s, to do nothing to fight the systems or the institutions that keep them going is to perpetuate them. Is that totally clear?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
All right. People will say, "Well, I don't do anything." That in the 70s, because they have become a part of our systems, is to help them to thrive and move and grow and be viable. At one time, the crime was the lynchings, the beatings, the cutting of the women's hair, the burning of witches, da da da. Okay, and you saw both of the analogies, race and sex, in that, I hope. Okay. Now the crime is that it has become institutionalized and has become a part of the system. The crime is not to fight the system. Because when you don't do something about it, you are helping it to move ahead. All right? So neutrality, okay, is as heinous in the 70s as the lynching was in the whenevers. Okay? Well, not okay, but just understand. I'm not saying about nothing about agreement today because I'm still dealing with my bird. I think, whatever your bird is, I think that when we look at the women's movement and deal with racism, one of the things that has been piteous is that women who are not white have been active, verbal, and involved since they said, let's do something, back yonder, years and years and years. I'm not talking about Gloria and Betty and this little wave. I'm talking about back, we've been in it. And the media has chosen to ignore us. And women have bought into that. And women say, women, white women invite us out of the movement by talking a lot of bullshit about, and I'm sorry, but just a little take, darling, but talking a lot of stuff about oh, you know, he's really a white middle class movement. Well, I won't even get into my middle class number today because I don't want to be stoned at Barnard. But women and minorities don't even have classes. That's a myth that we lay off on each other, which is dumb and ignorant. But white women don't have the right to invite me out of the women's movement. Do you see what I'm saying? It is a movement about women. And consistently, because of the media, and I'm trying to put it on the media as much as I can to try to save my sisters, and then they pick up the ball and want to tell me about, oh, well, you know, this is the issues that we're addressing. The issues that the women's movement has addressed have been issues that are pertinent to all women, and particularly pertinent to the woman who is of color, particularly pertinent. We have had to look at things in a very special perspective, but the issue remains the same. There is not one you could name that has not been particularly pertinent to us. And white women will tell us, "Oh, well, you know, this is about the women in the women's movement and white middle class women." I think that's one piece that's very, very piteous. The other piece is that the foundation of the second wave was laid down on a multicultural note. And many women, who I'll leave nameless, have refused to pick up on it. Example, when the National Women's Political Caucus was first formed, and I'm not talking about whether you like or don't like the caucus now, please let's don't get off on that. That's not the issue. What I'm talking about is when it was founded, way back in 70 whatever, the board was designed so that there would be particular slots for particular kinds of women to be sure that it was multicultural. One example. Whether you like it or not, Gloria Steinem was, and probably still is to many, many people, a spokesperson for liberationists that dealt with feminism. She never opened her mouth without a third world person. Whether you want to say third world, whether you want to say of color, whether you want to say minority. In a press conference, in a public forum. But the man, you see, the gauntlet was laid down, but it was not picked up, because people have wanted to not deal with racism. Do you hear that part that I'm saying? You see, and I think that we have to begin to see the linkages and to see that the history of the thing has been laid out very clearly for us, in addition to the fact that the issues are pertinent to all women, and all women have laid the foundation of the women's movement. And the women's movement, in many instances, has done the exact same thing that we claim male society has done to us in terms of lack of recognition, lack of credit, lack of history, a deliberateness involved in lack of inclusion, women's studies programs, curriculum that are developed with not a black face, not a Spanish-speaking face, not an Asian face, not dealing at all with that piece of it, or to even deal with the fact that we exist on Earth. Okay. All right. To move to some of the linkages. Now these are a few. I am sure that you can come up with many, 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 many more. As you come up with many, though, please keep in mind, and most of you I see from the list that I was given are involved in education in some way, at least that's what, maybe you're different people, but the list that I have says that. And I think that we have to look at the educational system in this country, right straight up through to when it ever finishes, and it never does, as the keeper of the value gate, probably the biggest keeper of the value gate that there is in our society, the maintainer of the status quo. Television and the church are probably the two closest rivals to that, but education, I think, still holds the number one spot as the institution that closest that remains closest to making sure that the values remain the same, because the educational system says that it handles the minds. and says that it is about information. And I feel the people involved in education, the deal in misinformation, are as dreadful as a doctor that that deliberately practices malpractice, because information is supposed to be what it is the educators are about. And so I just think that we need to take a little more seriously. I mean, I've heard people involved in education say, oh, I just don't know, I just, you know, without any motivation to find out. Do you see what I'm saying? To say, gee, you know, I really need to make that course more da-da-da-da-da, multi-something. Instead of just throwing up one's hands and saying, oh, well, I just never had an exposure, and I just never this, that, and the other. I think we'd be a little disgusted with a surgeon and say, oh, I just never saw a gallbladder before, so just leave it in there. Sew them up, you know, instead of saying, hey, go get somebody to see how I go about treating this. How do I go about treating this? Linkages. One, I think there's an interesting historic linkage between the attempted solutions to the kinds of problems that are caused by racism, sexism. The first wave of feminism, which it's silly to talk about because I don't think there was a first wave. I think there was feminism since women. But somebody has put a historic pin in different spots on our little route through our life, or the history of our lives. And the first wave, I think it's interesting, though the suffragettes kind of came down as famous because the press even then told us what it was we're supposed to think, but that really those women were involved in the abolitionist movement. They were abolitionists. Town Hall here in New York was a forum for female abolitionists, and as many of you probably know, because I see some of you teach women's studies, so I'm sure you know that. But I have to get started, see, and that's part of my start. Understand, see, because it says that up there, and if I didn't say that, then somebody would say, why'd you put that up there? Okay, so I think you have to understand that the history of us following one movement with the other, I find interesting. That those women then went to England to an international abolitionist conference, had no vote and no voice, because they were women, were relegated to the gallery, came back to this country and said, hey, we had best to address some issues about women, okay? But they were looking at the abolitionist movement as their freedom, okay? As the key to liberation for peoples, all right? And I think it's really important that we look at that, at least I find that interesting. Second wave was born, that I think we're still riding that one, was born, or let me say this, many of the people who were involved in screaming the loudest about kicking it off and getting it started, not that there were many people sitting in the Bronx and at their kitchen tables who were involved in the movement. That's one of the things that I feel about the movement, is that you can be in it and be anywhere. You don't have to pay dues anywhere. I just feel you can be a part of a movement because you are a part of it. You're a part of it in this part and in this part. But those people that kind of laid our foundations and kicked off a lot of our thought processes and formulated a lot of the things that we had been thinking a long, long time, and we said, that's it. That's what I've been trying to doggone it. That's what I've been feeling. That kind of which connotes in some way leadership, I guess. If you have objected to the word leadership, choose another one. I don't care. But whatever that role was, it was played by those people. Most of them came from the New Left and the Civil Rights Movement. Once again, two movements that were fantastic movements. Don't get insulted anybody who was involved in those movements. They were wonderful and fine and good. I should say are. don't you say anything here. But and gave this country a consciousness that we certainly had not known before and haven't seen again, and caused some real motion. However, they were neither one was particularly concerned with the pertinent concerns of the woman. All right, and once again, we began to follow one behind behind the other, not to address both. Is to let someone off the hook, which is what begins to happen in as I was talking about the women's movement. If I'm not a racist, I can be a sexist. If I'm not a sexist, I can be a racist. Because I've got my, you know, I'm involved in that larger struggle. You see, the larger struggle is what I want to make it. And please remind me to say something about the larger struggle before I stop saying my little part. Not to address both allows the most heinous kind of oppression, which is oppression within groups, which I think is the worst kind of all, because it indicates that enough of us have bought the dream and fooled ourselves into a spot in time in history that is most sad, is the saddest spot of all, to think that we are, in fact, in some way elevated above those people who are in our exact same position. Do you see what I am saying? Which I think is the most heinous crime. It's very, very obvious, I think, but we can all think of a million women's movement examples in the liberationist movement that has to do with color. Skin color has been one of our criterion for years and years and years, which is so, so sad. Hair texture has been one of our criterion for many, many, many years. We've just gotten away from and still have those people within our ranks that talk about good hair, don't we? Now, they're few. I'm not saying that they're common, but it's not, you hear it now and then, not recognizing hair is hair, you know, but good hair was anything from crimpy to that stuff that laid down, like, laid down. And of course, sex has been within all groups a criterion that we use to divide the betters from the betters within groups. We create a revolving door. We're always scrambling for the same crumbs together, the ins and the outs. A woman was at a meeting with me. I was talking about this summer, and she spoke Spanish for 10 minutes. And no one in the room spoke Spanish, but she. And when she finished, she said, "If you didn't understand me, you have a year and a half. We're in now." Now, I don't have any problem with her being in at all. I feel that Native American programs that are probably going to be next year's thing should be given the whole country back, as far as I'm concerned. Spanish-speaking programs, certainly. Any program for anyone, certainly. I don't have any problem with that. But why is it we have to scramble for that same little piece of pie, and then we allow that door to revolve? So we have a woman's year, and then a black year, and an Asian year, and then this year, and that year, and another year, instead of dealing with oppression, okay? And when is it that we come to each other's aid? That's what upsets me. When is it that we come to each other's aid? When the Farah strike was on out there in El Paso, black folks could not understand why they should be involved in that, because that was mainly a Spanish-speaking workers involved. But it was a problem of all oppressed people. When the Chinese folks were here screaming about the brutality in Chinatown, how many of us in this room went down there and said, "This has got to stop"? Not many of us. Maybe some of y'all did, but not many of us. I bet you not 10 of us in this room went to one demonstration that had to do with Chinatown, and that was about oppression. So we don't see any stake, you see. I think we've got to begin to see a stake in pushing each other's number, because 7% of the population runs us. 7%. Now that to me is shocking. That 7% of the population in this country has the kind of mobility that really sees to it that business goes on as usual, and the rest of us want to talk about whose struggle is larger. And I don't see a larger one. I see that we've got to. Our energies might be placed. Now, I'm not saying that everybody has got to run out 7 nights a week to a different movement meeting. I am not saying that. What I'm saying is you may place your energies in a particular place, but for God's sake, see the stake, and once in a while write a letter. You see, and I think that's important. And when that begins to happen, it's going to be all over. It's going to be all over. And I say when because I'm hopeful. God knows I don't know why. We are not allowed, as another linkage, to have our societally accepted assignments pay off. All of us, as groups of people, have been assigned certain kinds of things that are appropriate for us to do so that society will run smoother, our little jobs that we do. And many of us have accepted those assignments, willingly have excelled in them, but when the goodies come along, We're not allowed to cash in on our experience and our excellence. Cooking. I think we don't have to argue about the fact that traditionally cooking has been a woman's responsibility in terms of a societal assignment. But when that exact same job is taken out of the home, given authority, given planning, given a decent wage, it's called a chef, it's made a man, and we are locked out. Sewing. There's a difference between a seamstress and a tailor, or a couturier. And a couturier is really cooking on all four burners. And that's definitely a man. A tailor is a man, and that has a certain kind of status, prestige, money, authority, and of course all of the physical kinds of things, like, oh, cooks, chefs can't handle, female chefs can't handle heavy pots. Well, junior cooks handle heavy pots, not chefs. So you see, I think we have to deal with the societal assignment. Sports, in certain areas, non-white Americans have certainly been given the responsibility for carrying certain sports. And it has been our way of getting an education, it's been our way of getting a piece of the dream that's crumbling rapidly, but at one time was had some viability. But when it came to managing with authority and planning, we've not been. Like football includes one black quarterback with all the black Americans in football. That's incredible. And I don't know if there's a manager. I doubt that there is. A coach, rather, whatever it is, of that kind of team. When Frank Robinson was given that one little managerialship, they interviewed him to death. Wanted to know this and that. Could he do it? Could he not? Why? You know, because it wasn't within that, it wasn't within the role that we should manage. You just get out there and follow directions, just play, get your heads beat in. But don't, but you are not, you don't go up through the ranks in the same way, in the same kind of, even though we've proved we can do the job. Teaching, school teaching, when you look at the number of teachers and the responsibility that women have had for the educating and nurturing and keeping of children, the school mom was consistently a woman, but when you divided the one-room school up, you needed a principal, it was a man, and school superintendents are always men, certainly not always, in most instances. Less than 0.01% of school principals in this country are female, with all of our experience in the teaching, nurturing, and keeping of youngsters. And you could think of many, many more. Rhythm, singing, and dancing with non-white peoples, and go-go girling, hee-haw, your television programs. And we are not allowed to cash in on accepted assignments. When it's easy for the power group, responsibilities are given to us, or the alleged power group, in case anybody later on wants to argue about whether there is a power group, which I find incredible in this group, but I certainly don't put anything past today. The alleged power group will give us responsibility far beyond what their tales about us would say. Example, women are totally and completely almost in charge of making sure that human beings continue. Now, what a responsibility to give a dizzy little stupid inferior nothing. But the reason we're given that responsibility almost totally is because it's easier, okay? And because we're given those kind of responsibilities, the card is sometimes peaked that maybe they don't think we're quite as incompetent and silly and stupid and superficial as people would like to say. Birth control is almost completely a female responsibility in this country. Now, in India, Lul Indira tried to switch it up, and you see what happened to her. And I'm certainly not saying that that's why she was defeated. The poor child had gotten a bit batty, but she certainly set a standard of male responsibility for population control that was very objectionable. And of course, she went about it strangely, because she went about it in a forced way. She went about it without any education. People didn't understand what was going on, blah, blah. But in this country, women have that almost total responsibility. The vasectomy rate in this country, the rubber usage, the whatever that has to do with men is greatly minimized because of the fact that women are forced if they want to go about the business of the pleasurable part of sex, to take pills, use diaphragms, and do all of that kind of thing, or bear the brunt of carrying around either the decision about abortion or a 9-month pregnancy. Do you see? And that doesn't make any sense. And that's a tremendous responsibility. If women ever got themselves together about population control, I mean, my God, that's unbelievable when you think about it.
9 months is the hereafter.
The hereafter. Yes, but at least after it's there, you can at least begin to demand some help. But when it's inside, darling, you just have to work along with it. You can't do a thing with it, but either get it out or carry it. When we look at the non-white tremendous responsibilities that we're given, you know, someone that I thought totally incompetent and just not quite right in the head, I would not allow to cook for me, to feed me every day. I would not allow to take care of my children, to take care of my children. Now, I might allow them to feed me, but I don't think I would. But I certainly would not allow anybody that I thought really did not have it together to have the complete responsibility of my child. Those kinds of responsibilities, it happens when it's easier. Okay, and I think what we have to begin to look at is, what about when it's not so easy? What about when it's easier for us? Why can't we have those kinds of responsibilities? We tend to do the same kinds of things with women and other minorities. We're all kind of in need of protection. That's a very, for your own good, is a very common kind of thing. It's not quite so common with non-white Americans now, because we've acted so ugly about it. But it's very common for women, and it was at one time very common. Oh, you know, they like it on, it's better for them on the plantation. Because they you know, they are fed and this and had clothes and blah, and it's really better for you. It's for your own good that you are not free. You need caring for. You know, I don't want you to work that night shift and make that extra money and be that new supervisor on the night shift, because you may be hurt. I am concerned for you as a woman. Ooh, what if you were raped? Well, what if he is mugged? It's not, you know, it's not much. You see, we tend to have that need of protection. We're dumb. We're silly. We can take the same jokes and just insert a name, like the example you're talking about and that I mentioned before. You can take any Polish joke, Native American joke, black joke. I've not heard a lot of Asian American jokes, but I'm sure there are, you know, but I've just not heard a lot. But you hear the, you know, Italian jokes, you know, jokes about women. If you just erase out, you can insert. And they're all just as funny if you are inclined to laugh, which I'm sure that we are not. But the punchline can remain the same, because we even get our stereotypes confused because of the fact that we do the same kind of thing. We're dealing with systems that are burdensome to those people that do not see themselves as the oppressed in them. Sexism certainly is burdensome to males, and heaven knows racism is burdensome to American whites. So we can talk about that a little more if you'd like to later. We're consistently left out of history deliberately and in a planned way. I don't think I need with this group to expound on that. But if our contributions speak of either our femaleness or our non-whiteness, our contributions are ignored. If our contributions are too big to be ignored, then our femaleness or non-whiteness is ignored. And that's consistently the way we are gotten around in a deliberate, planned way in history. We tend to be fun-loving, superficial, tend to be together, poorly educated, a deliberately created poor image of ourselves as women and other minorities, and groomed for service. Are the kinds of things that are appropriate for us deal with something that makes life comfortable for someone else. Okay, and our whole career pathing and that kind of thing gears us in that way. The law now combines us. In my outfit, we talk about women and other minorities because we see women as a minority sociologically. The law talks about women and minorities, and you've seen, I'm sure, many judgments that have come down that way. What's interesting, too, is that we all reap the harvest of each other's thing. There's not been one piece of legislation that has been on the behalf of racial minorities that has not included women, and not one piece of legislation has come down for women that has not benefited racial minorities. The law combines us. We suffer from bruntism. At one time, the economy was blamed on the fact that, well, we know who's on welfare. Well, most folks on welfare are white because they're more whites, but they talk about a disproportionate number of other peoples being on welfare, and that's the reason the economy is in such bad shape. Well, now the latest thing is that it has to do with the fact that there are too many working women of childbearing age. So we serve as an excuse. Bruntism is what we call it. Bruntism. We suffer from a lack of self-definition. We're not allowed to define ourselves. We're always being measured by someone else's yardstick. We look differently. Different from whom? Different from men, different from whites. We're biologically different. Well, we have to begin to say different from whom, and by whose standards. But we do not have the luxury of our own yardstick. I think probably Black is Beautiful was the first time that an oppressed group struck out and said, we insist upon self-definition. We're not going to wait for a Gimbel's boutique, an Afro boutique, or for it to be on the front cover of Vogue. Natural's going to be what I grow out of my head. And if it doesn't come out silky and I can't do like this with it, it is still beautiful, and it's beautiful because I said so. Okay, and it's not beautiful because Monsieur Doom Doom said so. Okay? But for years, even our magazines, racial minority magazines, insisted upon a light and bright, straight-haired look in order to be a model. And the sexist ramifications of that are very interesting. I'm sure I don't have to spell them out for this, okay? And so we women now, MS, the New York Times will tell you, we will not use that. We will call you Miss or Mrs., and then they will put Mrs. So-and-so who likes to be called MS. You know, but they refuse, you know, that self-definition. I don't have the luxury to say what I'm going to be about and whether that is going to be good for me. Okay, we share that. Ownership as a notion. We can't own racial minorities anymore in this country, but we can own women. Most marriage laws list women as chattel. When I say marriage laws, I mean state marriage laws. And the notion that one can do with one's property what one wishes is very common in this country. Child battery centers get a lot of flack from parents. Well, that's my child. Who are you to tell me what I can do with my child? He said, well, the child's pelvis is broken, for God's sake. That's my child. That's not your business. He or she belongs to me. Or go to a wife battery or a female battery center. That's my woman or my wife. You can't tell me what. And in many states, wife battery is not a crime. There's no such thing as wife rape, because that is your property. You can't rape something that belongs to you any more than in what we now can, I guess, a little bit of relief, call the olden days, could talk about what someone could do with their slave. You couldn't tell somebody, you can't lynch that person. That was their property. Okay? And we deal with that ownership notion that is very much a part of our everyday lives, very much a part of everyday lives, in the way we think about the relationships between people one to the other.
Okay,
yes.
The woman who started in Women's Abuse Center in London mentioned in an interview recently that she grew up in a family where her father was abusive of her mother. And they used to go out and ask the neighbors to intervene, and they would say, well, we can't interfere with a man and his family.
That's right.
That's right. We can't interfere with a man and his family. And that is common here. The female who is there under protection, abused, because he will say, that's my whatever.
Now, the notion is, and we do have that notion about property, Americans think very much about the fact that what belongs to me, I am in control of. Okay, and I'm sure that's true in England, but I don't ever talk about other cultures because I don't know that much about them. And I feel that people that go places and visit and then say they know. But I'm sure she knows that she was involved in it. I thank you for the example.
We deal with a constant double standard. The double standard is also a very good test for subtleties in racism, sexism. When we're saying to ourselves, I wonder if I am being racist for real. Am I really afraid of that person because it is a dangerous person, or am I afraid of that person because that person is black or Spanish speaking or Asian American or Native American or something. Double standards. How would I feel if that young man were white? Double standards are very good, or what would I think if this were a woman? You know, when we're wondering whether, you know, and this is something that I think because we've become very subtle, we've refined these two isms to a science. We do have instances more and more in our lives where we say to ourselves, oh my goodness, I wonder if I'm really being such and such, or am I just right? And you hear that a lot. Well, I think, you know. Run it by the double standard test, and you'll come out with a very, very valid answer. You may not want to say out loud, but you can answer it inside. What is all right in that double standard thing? What is all right for the power group is not all right for us. Child care for certain women takes the form of an institution called mammy-nanny governess. Child care for others of us means child care center, but others of us are told that we're negligent. While Ms. Fox is not a mammy-nanny or governess, gets not only is she not taking care of a biological child, it's so important to do in this culture, but she gets status for not doing it. And she gets rewarded for not doing it. Whereas I just get told that I'm silly and negligent and irresponsible. We're all talking about our biological children. Or what is all right for us is not all right for the power group. Life. Women's work. Talk about, oh, you know, she can't do that job because it's too heavy. Well, when speaking of a female household technician, or heretofore known as domestic or maid, I've never heard anybody say, I'd never think of asking women to take out those garbage cans because they're too heavy. She's a woman. Right? So we're always dealing with a double standard. We victimize the victim. If they would only educate themselves, it's in some way our fault. If she hadn't been wearing that dress, she wouldn't have gotten away. Racial sessions. You know, not dealing with the fact that when you go down to report a stolen television, there's a woman tempted in the window saying, you shouldn't have that television in the window because you tempted a crook. You know? Or if someone were to snatch your jewelry off you, they say, oh, you shouldn't have been wearing it. Now that tempted that person. We have a very different kind of approach. Rape, oh, you know, nobody has the right to take from another person what does not belong to. That's the issue. Then we want someone's wearing. But we don't want to deal with that because we have to victimize. In some way, it's got to be the fault of the victim. You see? And I dealt with institutionalization as dealing with behavior. Our only explainable relationships in both sexually mixed and racially mixed, whether it's power group, alleged power group, alleged not, is one of subservience or sexualness, and sometimes I guess they're synonymous. We're always assumed, we don't have the luxury of friendship. It's assumed that, oh, what's going on there? Say, it's not that we are just going home from work together, or just stopped off to chat, or, you know, or that the black and or the woman or the Asian or the whatever is the boss. Okay, it's always that we're the subservient or that we are involved in the sexual. That's our only explainable relationship. That's what it is that's assumed. I think we have to also deal with the fact that if we don't begin to really address this lack of larger struggle and address these isms, these two at least together, we're going to be dealing with a situation like the black woman has been dealing with, who got the vote in 1920, interestingly enough, with women, and not in 1865 with other blacks. I'm always hard-pressed to find a larger struggle in that. These are a few. If you want me to expound on any of those or feed into your comments, I'm trying to leave time for you to workshop. Yes.
Something that you said before pointed out something. never thought of. And it's this. I have two male friends, I haven't seen in many years, that white men who went to Selma and marched and went to Malcolm X's funeral and were really into the civil rights thing. And when their wives started to feel a sense of loss at being home and raising children and not having another identity, the marriages were over. Mm-hmm. So that whole thing of being aware of the black movement never moved over to seeing the need of the woman that they lived with. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's very common. It's not at all unusual.
No. Well, there are white women who were involved in the marching and the demonstrations and the whatever, but still never understood the complexities, you know, in terms of the kinds of things that they were feeling inside themselves that really were going on within those blacks that finally had to say to them in many instances, look, you know, you can't be the chair of this committee. One of the basic kinds of things, I think, and one of the problems in coalition is that it's hard.